Hello? Hello?
Barbie, there you are.
Okay.
Where are we?
Okay, I heard some noise, but I didn't hear the name. So, who were the names?
Barbara with a question.
Okay, anybody else? Okay, Barbara?
Well, I just wanted to be clear. Kim, you're saying that this website that was going to be set up by or for this programmer has nothing to do with the program that she, I think you said, produces on KPFK?
No, it is. It is her show's. It is a website for
her show.
Her show, but it basically is ultimately driving traffic away from, you know, our website.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anybody else? I'll put myself on the spot.
Paul.
Anybody else want to be on it? Or Paul? Anybody else?
Ken.
Anybody else? Okay, our Paul, followed by Ken.
Okay, well, this is related to what we've already been discussing, obviously. At PAI, we have, you know, a web page for every show, and you can go there, and it can link to your own web page or whatever. But PAI doesn't, you know, pay for my web hosting or anything. My website's all mine. And I think this is, again, another thing of, I don't think this would be an FCC thing, I think this would be an IRS thing, which in many ways is even more dangerous. The station, we have to be very careful with who gets what benefit and how from the radio station. The rule is there can be no benefit inuring to the people involved with the not-for-profit. How to put this? I think this needs to be looked into seriously. I'll put it that way. I think Pacifica management needs to look into the very details of this and seriously consider their legal position regarding this. All right? I'll leave it at that.
I agree.
Okay. Ken is next. Ken?
Sorry, just coming off mute. The question is, the building of the website, who owns the URL, you know, the domain name, that should belong to Pacifica, and what is on that list? Pacifica should have this kind of control over the content of that. That website should be marketing products as when to come to Pacifica.
You're breaking up, Dan.
Yeah, you're broken up. I can't understand anything.
Okay. Is that any better? All right.
Can you talk? Keep talking.
Hello?
Now we can't hear anything.
Okay. Should I just jump on in the...
Yeah, go ahead. I mean, as far
okay.
as I'm concerned.
If Ken comes back, we'll just...
Yeah.
Do him
and Bill for
okay.
the back, too.
Okay. That sounded like somebody leaving, so... All right. Ken, so this money is coming into KPFK and being expensed on this person's website? In other words, the grant is being received by KPFK. Is that correct?
The grant was listed under just a major donation, not itemized,
okay.
so I didn't
okay.
know, and I just
okay.
saw the expense on the expenses.
Okay, so you've got the same problem in that that's a restricted grant to the station for a specific purpose. It can't be spent on just anything. It can only be spent on this one thing.
I don't know what restrictions there were. My understanding, which may not be accurate, is that the rest was going into the general fund.
Okay, then only the rest can be shown as a major donation to KPFK.
Right.
So from the bookkeeping point of view, that's a problem. But anyway, that said, on the larger issue, It's tricky. I mean, anybody can set up a website saying anything. I mean, a listener can set up a website about their favorite program and stick up all the archives, and, you know, you can't stop them. They can do that. Anybody can set up a website. The issue, as I think our Paul brought up, is the issue of benefit ignoring. In other words, people can do anything they want in their spare time, and you can't stop them. But if support is being solicited and the station is being used to run that money through as a 501c3, then the station has some responsibilities here. One is to account for the money properly, but above and beyond that, there's the issue of whether this website is benefiting an individual, in which case that individual is basically not paying taxes on the money, and it's being sort of washed through KPFK. So there are some IRS implications, especially if that website is accepting donations. If it's not, then the IRS issues are a little bit more, what's the word, more gray. We have a similar problem at KPFA where over the years we've been paying people, and part of what they've been doing is maintaining some of these off our website sites for other shows. And that's a problem because that's compensation to the individuals whose programs are benefiting to some degree, and it's unreported. So I guess what I would say here is KPFK really shouldn't be accepting donations for any websites besides its own website, because that's the only website that benefits KPFK directly. And if individuals are able to get $1,000 or $10,000 to support their websites, more power to them, but they sort of need to handle that off-site. You really shouldn't be using Pacifica's 501c3 to kind of wash that through, especially, and I can't emphasize this enough, especially if they're accepting donations on that website, because that's a fiscal sponsor relationship, and when you cover up a fiscal sponsor relationship as something else and don't pay the requisite fees, you've really got a mess on your hands if anyone should happen to look at it. Because it is treated as basically untaxed compensation, and there's all kinds of penalties that are associated with that. So it's a little weird, and basically it should have been handled in a different way. In other words, KPFK shouldn't be hosting this money because the only website that KPFK itself has any investment in is KPFK.org. And that's really the only website that KPFK should be accepting money for, in my opinion. Okay, I'm done. Ken, are you back?
Yes, I'm back. I got on a landline. So,
go ahead.
I just want to make a comment about something you said. People cannot just start a website and start streaming archived materials. The archived materials are owned, you know, are probably owned by the station unless it's music that was produced somewhere else or something. Or it's a question of ownership. They don't have God-given cosmic rights to transmit it. You know, they can get away with it, but I'm saying, and if nobody objects, they might do it, and we might have a policy to allow people to do it, but perforce, they don't have the right to do it, to just start streaming content and say, this is Ken Aaron's version of Pacifica. These are the best shows, and I'm just going to pull them off the archives and stream them myself, so you don't have to listen to Pacifica. You can just come to my website and listen to my version of Pacifica. I don't have the right to do that. I may be getting away with it. The foundation may decide that it's in its benefit to allow people to do that, but you don't have a legal right to do that under current laws, I don't think. Like you, I'm not a lawyer. But anyhow, the other thing about it is, it's a question, I think the station or the foundation would have the right to make a special website. Let's say it was coverage of a convention or hearings or a special project we were doing, and that was associated with a specific program. We might make a website that is dedicated to a specific program, and it should be, the domain name should be owned by Pacifica, and Pacifica pays the cost of maintaining the website and inures any benefit from it, or whatever the word is. But, and there would have to be some flexibility in terms of accepting participation from other people and so forth. It might get complicated. But I completely agree that it can't just be left up to the programmers, because naturally they will tend to go towards their own personal benefit for themselves or their agenda, their political viewpoint, or whatever they're associated with. And so we have in the past and currently do, as Bill just mentioned, program associations with other nonprofits. We used to have with Physicians with Social Responsibility in L.A. We have with Office of Americas currently. Bill was talking about a PETA orga program or something like that. So it goes back and forth, but we wouldn't want to be taking donations to Pacifica that then go to maintaining the ACLU website or donations for the ACLU. Although sometimes we do that. We take donations and we split it with Food for the Homeless program. So there's always going to be complications. We just need fiscal guidance from national to handle these unusual situations and prevent people abusing them for personal gain. We have to set the policies. The policies are going to have to be flexible because the venues are changing. There's apps and tablets and all kinds of things in the future we don't even know of yet. So we can't stick in the past and say, no, we're not going to do this because we don't understand it. We have to be flexible, but we need to have a reasonable policy and then a method of evaluation for oddities and anomalies, how to accommodate them. We have, like right now, Smiley and West. Smiley and West are going to come on and promote events. They're going to go around to events. There's going to be a contractual arrangement when they go to these events about who gets money for what. When they sell a book at that event, how much does the foundation get? How much do they get? So there's mixed funds. And they may have other nonprofits participating with them and other for-profit companies. It can get complicated. But we don't want to take ourselves off of the playing field because of those complications. We just want to avoid anything that compromises the integrity of our mission statement. So, I mean, I would think it would be fantastic if we can find and implement standardized policies for donations and, as we were talking in other committees, get a broadcaster's agreement that clarifies ownership of intellectual property that's created by the programs. But we could, you know, standardize the financial protocols to be properly used would be great.
Okay, Tracy to the stack. I think I heard Kim.
Yeah.
Bill, weren't you on the stack at some point?
Yes. Whenever you get to me.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I think I rolled right over you. I apologize. So let's go to Bill.
Our poll at the end.
Okay.
Okay, well, yeah, I guess I agree with most of what Ken was saying. I remember, well, we discussed this on Frat, and I never really follow up on some of this, but you know, we got a little paper written by John Krigler and somebody on his staff. You know, he's our FCC attorney back several months ago. And one of the things it pointed out is that we potentially open ourselves up to some liability if we have programmers setting up websites that we don't control. Because, you know, if the programmers are directing listeners to go to those websites for more information or for anything, and has the name of the show as the part of the website, you know, it's the perception at least is going to be it's controlled by Pacifica. So, you know, there may be some legal liability depending on what they do. And, you know, I don't know if anybody's even thinking about that. I know there's some programmers at KPFT that set up their own websites. It's partly to overcome deficiencies in our own that we've had over the years where they want to have more content available for their, related to their particular show, which I think is good. Have more details about guests that they have on, for example, and like on the previous show and on the next show. And also, they do have archives that go back. The reason is they go back more than the 2 months that we have normal for our regular audio archives. They're not, I don't think they're benefiting from it financially at all. They're paying for the stuff out of their own pocket. But, you know, there's a good reason sometimes to have that, but, we do need some guidelines, at least. I think that would help. And like Ken was saying, we need to probably work some of this into a programmer's agreement or whatever also. And it includes unpaid as well as paid staff. So it's, I'm just basically saying it's complicated.
Okay. Kim's on the stack, I'm on the stack, our Paula's on the stack. Go ahead, Kim.
Yeah, all these issues of ownership and all that stuff, again, it, you know, we can talk about it, we've talked about it before. I'm really just dealing with the specifics of the accounting. And I don't know that that's the only personal expense that's gone through our budget. I just know that's one I saw. So my issue is this issue, whether she should or should not have a website is not what I'm dealing with. I'm just knowing that personal expenses should not be going through our, you know, I'm dealing with the IRS issues here and the accounting issues. And I think there are plenty of problems with the other stuff, but I'm not going to weigh in on that today.
Okay. I'm going to go to myself. And again, Kim, there's fund accounting rules that we can talk about and talk about with the National Office privately and try to get that tightened up a bit.
Right. That's my main concern, you know.
So we'll do that. Apart from that, I just want to say a little bit about copyright because that seems to be some of the issues that are coming up. And I do think we have to differentiate between employees on who are paid to produce and host content, which of course is done on our dime. Pacifica pays for it and Pacifica owns the product.
Right.
And then there's volunteers who we are facilitating the creation of the content in some kind of a partnership. But we're certainly not paying them for the content. So in some sense, they have an increased claim of ownership because they're not drawing any compensation directly from us. And there is a difference. When you're talking about sort of non-commercial content that hasn't been paid for by any entity, a lot of times what you fall into is what they call Creative Commons Protocol, which was invented by Lawrence Kulisig and Company in San Francisco. And the basic drift is it's a copyright protocol that allows for free distribution for non-commercial use, but retains copyright for commercial use where benefit inures to any individual. So it says basically, roll it around the world. We want as many people to listen to it as possible. But this is a non-commercial product, and profit does not inure to any individual from distributing this content. It is owned for commercial purposes. It is free for non-commercial purposes. And it's a pretty well-established protocol that seems to work fairly well. So it's something that we might want to incorporate for this kind of free content. I don't think that it applies to people that are on the payroll, obviously, because there's an exchange there. There's a quid pro quo of dollars for content production services. So that's all that I really wanted to say. And I think that our call was next on the stack. I hope I'm right about that.
I hope so, too.
Okay.
Yes,
go for it.
About Ken's thing, he also brings up something there which needs to be noted, which is, if you want to set up a, take the archives and put them on your website and do all of that, that's one thing. If the this also gets into what Tracy said, so I'm putting everything together. There are different ways that would work. One would be if Joe Blow just likes it and puts various shows on there, he's violating copyrights left and right. If I want to put my program's web archive up on my website, it depends on how I do it. If, for instance, while we were off the air, BAI wasn't functioning from 120 Wall, we had to record our program. So, and the archives got bollocks, so I put the archive of that up on my website. However, I only put in the talking parts, which I own, which we get in, that gets into Tracy thing. If anybody takes the copyrighted stuff that's like a record and they put it on a website, they are facing a problem with the record companies, which are vicious. These are the people who steal 12-year-olds college funds because they downloaded some stupid song.
Yeah.
So there's that issue too. I mean, exactly. I have in the past spoken to and read about a whole lot of this copyright stuff. And the basic bottom line is that copyright can get extremely complicated to the point where I don't think anybody knows how a case would work out in court until after it's worked out in court. Because some things can go back and forth. In terms of like a producer like myself going on the air, the stuff I do is mine. We've sort of established this in Pacifica in the past, partly because a particular person tried to basically personally steal people's content at one point in Pacifica.
Yep.
And so this has been established. Like when I go on the air and I say, well, in my opinion, the world is flat. That's all mine. You can't have that. That's copyright or Paul Martin. And, you know, exactly what Pacifica could do with it, they can certainly put it up on the archives and leave it there. We all agree to that because we agree to that in the first place. Anybody who doesn't agree to that would have to jump up and say, I don't agree to that, at which point they're probably not on the air. Their agreements are meaningful. And so the copyright stuff can be very complicated, and people grabbing things and putting them on, it depends on who it is and how they do it. And the bottom line is any questions regarding copyright really, really, really have to go through a copyright lawyer because it's so damn complicated. I'm done.
It is. Okay. All right. So I think that brings us to the end of the agenda. Is there anyone who wants to get in a parting shot? No, you've all exhausted yourself. Okay. So thank you, everyone, for passing the consolidated budget. That's wonderful. Hopefully on Thursday that will be the end of that, and we have completed a budget cycle, which is awesome. And we will meet again is the question. We have a meeting scheduled for Christmas Day, and I was not really expecting that we would have that meeting. I don't see any pressing reason why we have to meet again in the month of December. So I'm inclined to think that our next meeting will be the second Tuesday in January, whatever days that might be. Is anyone attached to that or has any other suggestions?
Well, I may not be on this committee.
That, of course, is true, and we will deal with whoever is. But we still get the right to set the next meeting since we're the committee for now.
All right. Madam Chair?
Yes, Campbell.
Yes, I think that with all of our stations, there may be a number of issues that don't just resolve themselves very handily to the terms that we have. One of the things that I've done with regard to my committee responsibilities is to share them with my LSB such that people can either identify for the committee in the future or not, but at least these issues that we may have that are ongoing will not just fall through the cracks and people come up, you know, next year telling Kim or me or somebody else, look, you know, we came up with such. Oh, yeah, we had the same thing, too. You know, I mean, so that we don't end up going through the same situation twice. So it could be a point I would suggest that maybe with the PNB and certainly for an NSC-type committee that we, pass the baton, so to speak. This also, I think, would apply to the FRAT so that we can pass the baton in some fashion and people have particular concerns, issues, or problems in their station areas, or if they had an issue that they wanted to bring forward, that this would be brought forward, that somebody would have some institutional memory. So I think that it would be a good thing for us to look at in terms of individually, if we don't get it with the PNB at this time, to individually, prepare reports such that we can pass the baton in some reasonable fashion.
Yeah, I think treasurers doing so, and PNB reps can do so as well, but that would be later because that doesn't turn over till the end of January.
Right,
and, of course,
right.
The treasurers may turn over as soon as the end, as soon as a couple of weeks. We don't know. I think a report is good. Also, if people don't object, and I'll just, you know, throw this out as a possibility, we certainly could have an open door for the first meeting in January for both outgoing treasurers and incoming treasurers.
Sounds like a great idea.
I mean, I don't see any reason why it would be a problem. So, Kim, if you're passing the baton on to someone else and that's happened by January 11th or whatever the date is, you know, you could certainly come to the meeting one last time and help
it's
transition.
January 8th.
January 8th, yeah. If you wanted to.
I will see how I feel at the time.
Yeah, obviously it's optional, but, you know, it you could.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair?
Yeah, I'll talk.
Yeah, do we need a formal motion on that, or can we just agree that the treasurers that are here will be on the next meeting, it's just that some of them may not be able to vote at it? I think that covers it, so that we have...
I think we should probably make a formal motion, and we'll include in the motion that the next meeting is January 8th, so we'll kill two birds with one stone.
So moved.
Like, okay, let's just formalize what the wording is, because our Paul needs that. So the next meeting of the Finance Committee will be January 8th, 2013. And at that meeting, the Finance Committee invites both outgoing treasurers and ingoing and incoming treasurers for all five local station boards, although only seated treasurers will be able to vote. Is that reasonable?
Second.
Okay. Any objections?
Without objection.
Okay, so Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, Happy Hanukkah, and we'll meet
Merry
again on January 8th.
Thank you, everybody.
What did you say, Kim?
No, our call shouted in Merry Isaac Newton's birthday.
Oh, okay. That too.
And Bill said thank you.
Terrific.
Okay.
Yeah, and I hope some of these elections kind of, you know, get worked out.
Don't we all?
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how and when they get worked out.
Save the budget.
Well, this is good. So we'll cope with whatever we've got to cope with on January 8th, right?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Take care, everyone. And be safe.
Good night.
Good night.